to identify in human consciousness. We need to identify in human mentality. There is animal mentality, dog mentality, sparrow mentality, snake mentality, bumblebee mentality, butterfly mentality, rat mentality, roach mentality, rock mentality, tree mentality, doo-doo mentality, sperm mentality, flower mentality, all kind of mentality. And the human being is such a free vessel that he can become any of those mentalities. If he want to be a rock mentality, he's free to be it. If he want to be a turd mentality, he's free to be a turd mentality. If he want to be a bumblebee mentality, he's free to be it. He can go along and fly on the flowers, touch upon sweet-smelling things, touch upon beautiful things. He can mix the pollen and generate the life of the plant and make the fruit grow nicely. But if he want to, he can be a simple old housefly. He's free. We are free spirit. We are free mind. We can become any form of life we choose to become. If we don't have direction in our life, then the winds of circumstances will decide for us what our mentality will be. If you don't have a knowledge program, if you don't have a philosophy of life, if you don't have a philosophy of life to live by, then you are like trash in the wind. And your essence are going to be blown accidentally into a firm place. And you might fall in fly germs, and you come up as a fly. You might fall in dog semen, and you come up as a dog. Or you fall in pig slime semen, you come up as a pig. Every once in a while, you fall in Einstein semen. And there's a rare incident over the period of centuries that a Bilalian becomes an Einstein quality. Let's not leave these things to accident. Let's come into a philosophy of life. Let's identify with Quranic principles, with Quranic knowledge for advancing society. Let's identify with it. If we can't identify with it, let's abstract. Let's abstract that clear, basic teaching for organizing the life of an individual, the life of a family, the life of a community, and setting it on the path of constant, steady progress. Let's extract that knowledge from the Quran and give it not as Islam. Let's give it as simple philosophy of life for all African American people. That's the key. That's the key. A philosophy of life. If you can abstract it from some other context, from some other body of knowledge, then I say do it. And if you come up with it, you'll find that it compares with ours. Human nature is the same all over the world for all periods of time. If you are able to find the pathway back to that fundamental knowledge or science on which God has organized or created human life, baby, it will be the same for you as it is for a Muslim. Those people who formed the ideas that have guided and motivated this nation, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, these valuable statements of logic that speak to our human dignity, that speak to our sacred dignity, a sacred dignity for all people. Don't you know it's the same in the Quran as it is in that constitution? Allah says too that he has created something unique, something very special in the human being, that if he makes correct use of it, he will excel. He will become the master in his environment, not the slave in his environment. He will become the master in his environment. He will be able to harness the powers of nature. He will be able to harness the secrets of nature. He will be able to build civilization and make great progress. And he can rise to great heights only if he cultivates that resource in him that God gave him by nature. Your human resource. We say we're poor on welfare. We're miserable. We don't have jobs. The white man is ahead of us. Baby, put me out on an island somewhere where there's no progress at all. They don't have to have no mineral resources on the island either. And if I can get enough people to come back to their humanity, to see that great human potential, that resource that is in their natural makeup, that can jut them forward and ahead in the world. If I can bring them to that understanding, baby, if there's not enough minerals on that island, we will move from that island and we will find an island that can sustain us. We will not perish on an island without anything. You should be able to survive with nothing. If the white man say, I'm not going to give you no welfare, not going to give you any job, not going to give you any special favors at all, you shouldn't be discouraged. You should welcome that kind of challenge. You should say to the white man, I'm the same man you are, and in a little while you're going to admit it. Yes. You have to have faith in your human potential. You have to have faith in your human capacity to do what any other man can do. You have the same humanity. You have the same work, the same resources. Don't sell yourself cheap. You don't have to go to a white man's college or university. You don't have to go to Yale to be a success. You don't have to go to Harvard to be a success. To tell you the truth, most of us would be better off if we just completely isolated ourselves from the total process of America and start from scratch, and build our humanity, and build our own culture, build our own knowledge. We would be much better off. The colleges are making us inferior because we take on the mind of those people who are dominating and manipulating us. I'm not saying put down higher education, no indeed. But if I had a choice between Harvard and the basic philosophy for human beings found in the Quran, I would say Harvard go to hell. I'm following the basic philosophy of human beings found in the context of the Quran. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the Bilalian of African American people would be much better off without the colleges of America. Without the university, we would be much better off. Without the civics or the politics of America, following the simple, basic human philosophy of the Quran, than we are with these fabulous, fabulous ivory tower institutions, but no basic human sense. Dear beloved people, we are blessed. And let nobody tell you that Allah has not blessed us here in America. Now, in my conclusion, I didn't plan to talk this long. I just got my second wind. You lucky you getting out this early. Yeah, you lucky you getting out this early. But in my conclusion, I want to drum this in good. We are no ordinary creation in America. We are no ordinary creation in America. We are no ordinary community in America. The people that I lead are an extraordinary people. The people that I lead are winners. They cannot lose. It's impossible for them to lose. Yes. Let me repeat. The people that I lead, called the American Muslim Mission, they are as much in God's hand as the Hebrews were under Moses. They as much in God's hand as Christ and his disciples were. They are as much in God's hand as the Ansar and the Muhajirs were in the time of Prophet Muhammad. Their destiny is watched over by Allah as much as the destiny of any people in the history of humanity. I'm not an educated man. I received a high school education from an inferior school by America's standards. I have only 3 hours credit in college, Luke Junior College, outside of the education I got under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad School. But I go and I speak to kings. I speak to presidents. I speak to bishops and priests. I speak to imams that are high up in the knowledge, high up in the world of politics and science. And they show an evident respect for me. They don't treat me like I'm somebody down there. They meet me and greet me like I'm on their level. In fact, I have to tell them, please, I'm only an ordinary fellow. Yes. Now, if this kind of respect came only from Muslims, you could say that the Muslims are playing favor to me so that they will have this American Muslim community supporting their national or Arab politics, or just to have it under their religious umbrella, right? But this does not just come from Muslim leaders. It comes from Catholic leaders. It comes from Protestant leaders. It comes from communist leaders. I went to China, and I went with a group, and didn't nobody introduce me. I came like everybody else came. But immediately the attention was focused on me. Immediately I was made the dignitary in the front. Oh, yes, this happened in a communist country. I go to communist country, and the National Guard come out. The National Police come out with escorts to take me where I want to go. I go to capitalist country, and if they know I need some protection, the police come out. The local police come out and escort me where I'm going, where I want to go. Yes, if I go to a society of monks, the top monks come out to meet little old me. Yes, I went to Mecca, and the top imam focused his attention on me, and he told the council, the Supreme Council of Imams, that man there, he is the leader for all American Muslims. Yes. Oh, what are you doing, bragging? No, I'm not bragging. I'm just trying to reach you. Because victory is right there. That is. I know it. It's there. Yeah, it is. I'm trying to reach you. It is no accident, dear people. And I might miss a plane. That shows you how much I'm concerned about this. Because I have an appointment back home, too. But I'm here now. And we're going to have to stay here until I finish this last point. Now, it is no accident. It is no just normal thing. It was no ordinary thing. It was no thing outside of a divine providence that slavery in America was built upon my ancestors. That was no accident. It's no accident that big ships went to the land of my ancestors and brought loads of people back packed together like sardines. Many of them died through it. They couldn't stand the heat and the stench down in the hull of the ship, packed so close together like sardines. But some survived. It is no accident that my people was reduced to the worst, the lowest, the most dehumanizing form of slavery in the history of the world. It is no accident that they were reduced to that most dehumanizing form of slavery. But they survived. They survived to remind the white man that he's a child of God. They survived that hellish, dehumanizing condition to remind the white man that you are a child of God, and you disrespecting your dignity as a child of God to hold me down on this level of a despicable animal. They kept their humanity through the terrible, dehumanizing period of slavery in this ugly period of history we call American slave history. That's no accident. It's no accident that a man by the name of David Walker was nothing but a slave. Nobody came from abroad and taught him anything. All he knew was slave America. But that man, inspired by the justice and the morals of Christ's teaching, he said, "This is wrong. This is wrong. You Christians, white Christians, are not real Christians. You're not real followers of Jesus Christ." He said, "This is wrong." He condemned the white American for putting the black American in that dehumanizing state. He condemned them with sharp, cutting language. He had courage. He didn't mind dying. And the poor man lost his life, but he didn't mind dying. He stood up for the rights of the oppressed, while he himself was rejected outside of the main line of knowledge, the main vein of cultural knowledge. He was not in it. He was culturally deprived, and yet he had the human sense, the human grasp of what is right and wrong, just by coming in touch with a few moral principles of the New Testament. He had the courage to stand up and condemn the whole white America and say, "Take my life if you want to. You are a race of savages." Just as Frederick Douglass did after him, he condemned the whole Christian America as a race of savages who was a disgrace to Jesus Christ. That's no accident. It's no accident that Marcus Garvey stood up and he called the people to unite. He called them to identify in a sense of dignity and pride as a people. Called them to look back on their ancestry with pride. Come out of that dehumanizing mind, inferior mind, that makes you feel you are beneath another person. He called them out of that and excited their interest in business, and even got a ship to engage in international trade. Marcus Garvey is no accident. No accident. It's no accident that Nawajir Ali, in 1928 or 29, he passed, I believe. But in the early 20s, Nawajir Ali stood up, a man whose name was not Drew Ali. He didn't have Dr. Farad Muhammad. He didn't have W.D. Farad to name him Drew Ali. He just happened to come across some history of them all, accidentally. So we would say, if we don't understand divine providence working in our behalf. Yes, he just accidentally stumbled upon something, and he said to his people, "Don't call yourselves Negroes anymore. You are not Negroes. You are descendants of the great Moor, the great Muslim Moor. You are Moorish American." Drew Ali, no accident. Then long come behind Drew Ali, Farad Muhammad, W.D. Farad, and he cast himself in the image of Jesus Christ and said that he is the living Son of God, God himself in the flesh. Isn't that what he told us? That's what he told us. God in the person, God in the flesh. And he told the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that you are blessed people, you are the divine people, the white man is the cursed people. They are the devil. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, being a man victimized as most poor blacks are, poor Abilalians are in this country, he was excited by this man and attracted to this man, because this man defended his case. That man said, you are not inferior. You are superior. The white man is inferior. That man said, you are entitled to be your own boss and to work out your own future for yourself and your people. This appealed to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he bought it. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad became the first minister of this mystic. Some call him an Arab, some call him an Indian from Pakistan, and some call him a Turk from Turkey. He's called by different nationalities. This man who excited the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and made him to call Farad Muhammad God, this man made the Honorable Elijah Muhammad free from the mentality that the Caucasian American society cast us in. American society cast us in a certain frame of mind that keep us inferior to Caucasian people. Oh, how can you say that? What about you Muslims? Are no exception, you know. You're not the only people that make progress. What about our other successful Americans who are not Muslims? They make progress. Believe me, I have met them. I have met other successful Dalalian Americans who make progress. I have met Benjamin Hooker. I have met the civil rights leaders. I have met your mayors and politicians. I have met your successful people in education. I have met your successful people in politics. I have met our successful people in business. And let me tell you something. Those that haven't been touched by the freedom that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad came into, they are inferior to the Caucasian man in America. They do not have freedom. They still think in the frame that the American oppressive society cast them in. The oppressive, slave-making America cast our mind in a certain mold. And those who have not been touched by that exciting desire and curiosity that touched the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they are still mentally, morally, and spiritually inferior to the average Caucasian American. I'm telling you what I have experienced. I have experienced. Those that I find who are progressive, who have real dignity and are progressive, looking forward and have a sense of self-respect and a sense of victory. A sense of victory. A sense of victory don't mean that you are victorious. A sense of victory means that you have the spirit to keep going until you are victorious. Those who have that sense of victory, they are those that have been touched by the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Those that drive forward and are not feeding upon the lies of their charged words of love of Christ, American democracy, that come from this country's life and history and succeed. If they are succeeding, they are touched by the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I'm not saying that they buy everything he says, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been the deciding factor in their lives. Oh, yes. Frederick Douglass was a great man, wasn't he? Frederick Douglass knew how to get in to America. Frederick Douglass didn't know how to get out of America. He was a great man. He knew how to get into America, but he did not know how to get out of America. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a great man. He had no concept or no program or plan for getting into America, but he did know how to get out of America. I don't have time to elaborate on this because some of you are tired, so tired, you want to tell me to sit down. But But I hope that you will follow what I'm saying and understand it without me going through a lot of explanation. Frederick Douglass knew how to get in, but he didn't know how to get out. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had no interest, no concern to get in, and he did know how to get out. Getting out of America is retrieving your identity. Getting out of America is retrieving your dignity. The American people who are called black, we cannot get into America until we first get out of America. So you have Vernon Jordan, you have Benjamin Hooks, you have Carlos Collins, you have all of these people who know how to get into America, but they can never enjoy or realize being in America. They always talk as though they are on outside of America. I talk to them. Vernon Jordan, he knows how to get into America, but he never gets in. He's always talking as though he's outside of America. Benjamin Hook, he knows how to get into America, but when you talk to him, he doesn't give me the feeling that he's in. He always gives me the feeling that he's on the outside, trying to get in. I know nobody yet born on this soil from my ancestors that have gotten in but me and those who follow me. Why are we successful in getting in? Because we first got out. You have to first get out, then you can get in. You have to reject America. You have to reject America before you can accept it. That's if you are a descendant of my ancestors. Any of you who have never rejected America, you are a slave, you are humanly inferior, you are just nothing. You must first reject America. How can we say we never rejected an America that dehumanized a whole people? That sent a whole people through torment that would drive the average white man insane. Huh? How can we say, I accept America before rejecting America? We have to first reject America. How can we say we accept Christianity before rejecting Christianity? You have to first reject Christianity. Oh, I know you're wrong there now, mister. You're saying we have to reject Christianity before we can accept Christianity. Christianity presents a white hierarchy to you. Christianity presents a Jesus who is Lord, who is white. It presents an angel, a heavenly order, who are white. Christianity presents you a white religion. This is a fact. Christianity presents you a white religion. I was just reading an article by a theologian of Christianity, and he was talking about the concept of God, the way they visualize God in the religion. And he said, in heaven, you will never see God the Father, because God the Father cannot be visualized. Let me repeat, because I know your mind. It's not anchored, it's not rooted, it's not stable, it's floating in the wind. So as I said that, you were here, but before I finished my statement, you were over there. The wind had blown you over there. So now you're back here again. Let me say it again. And I hope I can say it before the wind blow you again. This theologian said that we cannot see God the Father in heaven, because God the Father is not visualized. There is no image of him except his Son. This theologian said the only visual image you will see in heaven will be the Lord Jesus Christ. You're not going to see God the Father in heaven, not visually. You're not going to see any of the angels, not visually. The only figure that you're going to see in heaven will be the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, I have lived with white lords on earth long enough. Now, they tell me when I get to heaven, the only figure I'm going to see is a white lord. How can I buy that? How can any normal, natural, healthy-minded African-American buy that? I can't understand it. The only way I can understand it is that you are not natural, that you are not healthy, that you are not normal. You have become abnormal. You have become sick. That's the only way I can buy it. If you are not normal in your mind, if you are unhealthy in your thinking, if you are sick in your thinking, then I accept that you can say yes, 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 yes to the white Lord on earth and in the sky. Dear beloved people, we must exodus first. The Hebrews were in bondage in Egypt. How did they get their independence? How did they get their freedom? How did they retrieve their identity? They exodus. And most of us think they went physically over the land. They didn't go physically over the land. They went mentally. They went morally. They went spiritually. They went academically. Out from the academic structure of Egypt into their own academic context. They went out of the knowledge context of Egypt into their own knowledge context. And until we as a people in America step out of the knowledge context of America and step in a knowledge context, a body of knowledge that we ourselves can identify with and can move and progress in, we are not ready to enter America. Look, brothers and sisters, the average Bilalian, the average African-American who becomes successful economically, he becomes an instrument for exploiting his own people. He becomes a very factor of ruin and exploitation and oppression in his own people. Most of those who excel, they become the oppressors of their own people. Isn't this a fact? You know it's a fact. Show me the big black man in money, the big black man in the financial world, and I'll show you a black man who is oppressing his people. I'll show you a black man who is not a credit to his people. I know them. They're in real estate business, and they give you no better breaks than the Caucasian give you. They don't come up with a plan to reduce the financial pressure in our lives. They follow the same principle for business success that the white man follows. They go to his school, they learn his mind, and they oppress their people the same way that the white man has done. Why? Because they have not yet come into a knowledge context outside of America's academic knowledge structure. Come out before you can go in. Oh, mister, can you brag with your limited knowledge that you have a knowledge context independent of America? I most certainly can. This book is a knowledge context independent of America. This is not the Bible. This is the Quran. This is not a book that made churches. This is a book that made a nation. This is not the book that oppressed races. This is the book that liberated the blacks, that liberated Bilal. This is the book that said to humanity, you are one humanity. And a black is not superior to a white. And a white is not superior to a black. This is the book. Hold up. This is a book that brought the Christ message home in rational language. It says to you, to us, that God has made us a special creature. It says to us that we have a great potential, that we can rise up in the world and in civilization to great heights, that we don't have to depend upon the slave master in order to succeed. Say, follow God, obey God, and God himself will become your hand, leading you in the way. God himself will expand your mind. God himself will enrich your intellect. God himself will make you a ruler in the land. Just separate yourself from your slave master. Separate yourself from those that dominate you and have faith in your human resources and follow the command of God down the natural path of human progress. Yes! Yes! The prophet of this book, he called a black man from slavery and brought him to his side. He made him a co-worker with him. Prophet Muhammad took black Bilal, the Ethiopian slave. He took him and made him a co-worker at his side. He said, Bilal, call the people to worship. And he taught Bilal how to call the people to the worship. He said, Bilal, tell the people God is greatest. And Bilal said, Allahu Akbar. And the slave master, he heard it. And he trembled. He trembled because Bilal had another ruler in his life. A ruler that was beyond the reach of the slave master. Don't you know you cannot get out of America until you reach higher than America? Allah is higher than America. You reach to Allah, you can get out of America. And if you get out of America, you can get back in. Oh, yes. Let me go on a little further now. This same Ethiopian, black-skinned man from Africa, this same man, on his triumphant return to Mecca, the prophet had been rejected. The prophet had been thrown out of his own homeland. He was born there a Meccan, free in that city as all other native Meccans. But they persecuted him simply because he said, one God, one humanity. They threw him out because he wouldn't cater. He wouldn't pay favor to their narrow tribalism and their tribal God. They threw him out. But God gave him victory. And he marched back in with 10,000 fearless Muslims. Most of them not Bilalian. Most of them not black. Most of them white-looking people. Most of them white-looking folks. He marched back with 10,000 of them. And when he got back in the city and brought calm to the city, and told the people demonstrating the mercy of God, there will be no further blood brooding, no one taking out his bitterness on his brother. This is the end of the war. Those who have suffered losses in the family, you must bury the hatchet and now live at peace with each other. Yes. Gave amnesty to his enemy. Gave a haven, a safe place in his government to his enemies. And then he said, with calm reigning, he said, Bilal, you black man, Bilal, you African man, go put your feet on top of the Kaaba. Go stand on that sacred house with your feet. Bilal climbed on top of our sacred house with his feet. He stood with his feet upon our sacred house. And what did Bilal say? God is greatest. Allahu Akbar. Yes. Yes. Prophet Muhammad's co-worker was sent on the day of victory to go on top of the sacred house that is a symbol for the the unification of all people. That sacred house that's a symbol for the unification of all people. Prophet Muhammad sent my ancestor on top of it. It ain't too sacred for your feet, Bilal. Stand on it with your feet. And tell the world, tell this nation that have been brought to calm and peace that God is greatest. That God is greatest. And Bilal gave out the chant that brought the people together for prayer. Oh, how wonderful it is. Let me tell you something else about Bilal. Bilal's specific part of that duty to call people to prayer, it came just before the daybreak. He was assigned to call the people just before dawn, to awaken them to make their dawn prayer. Listen very closely, Muslims, and I hope the non-Muslims too, because it's yours as well as it is ours. You're part of this divine history. You're part of this divine providence. Now, he told Bilal to make the adhan, but he told him also that he was obligated to make the morning adhan before the break of day. What will that call do in the morning before the break of day? It is not only a call to make prayer, it's a call to wake up to your daily obligation. The one who wakes you up early in the morning wakes you up not only to make ablution and to say your prayers, but he starts your day for you. Bilal was appointed the position of starting the day for the people. Aren't we living in a period of utter darkness? When it comes to human respect, when it comes to human morals, when it comes to human morals, isn't America in a state of utter darkness? America has degenerated into a state of utter darkness. The pimp is given more respect than the priest. The media give more attention to the pimp, the murderer, than they do to the priest. This nation is more in the grip of crime than it is in the grip of freedom. The average citizen in America is more oppressed by the circumstances of crime and immorality than he's liberated as a Christian. Aren't we in a state of utter darkness, humanly speaking and morally speaking, culturally speaking? Yes. And who is it in America that is showing courage, faith in the future? Who is it in America that is showing courage and faith in the future? Who is it in America that is not preaching doomsday? The most courageous man I know in the government is President Carter. And his talk is very low key. He hits very dull notes. I don't hear Benjamin Hooks speaking with faith in the future, with the same force, with the same confidence that you feel coming from me. No. 5 years ago, I came into the position of leader of this community. 5 years ago, our city of Chicago had gone to hell. The gangsters had us locked in. The gangsters were free. We were locked in behind our bars. Every home almost on the south side had to have bars up to it to keep out the thief, to keep out the robber. Our women couldn't walk the street. Our old people being knocked down on the street. That was the state of Chicago when I came into office. Our community called the Nation of Islam then. Our temple that was on Stony Island. It was infiltrated. It was infiltrated by elements from the establishment, by elements from the government. It was infiltrated. And they were oppressing and repressing our community through their stooges that they had disguised as members of our Nation of Islam. They were making our charities of no effect. They were making our business money of no effect. Our business ability, they were making them of no effect. They was aborting our efforts before our efforts could be born. Well, can you name them? Can you put your finger on them? Can you say whether they were FBI or CIA? I believe they were FBI agents, CIA agents, police agents, just plain old flunkies working just for a pat on the back from the establishment. There were a number of low-down degenerates working in our community, but the people orchestrating it were members of the wicked establishment we call our American government and society. Yes, they were repressing and oppressing our community. They were keeping us from realizing economic victory, keeping us from realizing moral victory. Do you think it's an accident that the morals of the Nation of Islam fell so low within a period of about 5 or 7 years that most of its ministers were seen in the image of a superfly? Most of his ministers oppressing the weak people in his congregation, many of them sending people out to rob banks, many of them engaging in the dope traffic. Do you think that that was an accident, that that was just a normal occurrence, that the high morally conscious nations of Islam suddenly in a period of about 5 or 7 years felt that low level moral degeneracy? No, it was no accident. The establishment infiltrated the Nation of Islam. They fed corruption. They studied for years the weaknesses of the leaders in the Nation of Islam. They found ways to put women on them. They found ways to excite their lust. They found ways to excite their material greed. And they chose even secretaries for the men, secretaries for the minister. They chose even ministers for the congregation.